Hello and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host Liam Donoghue. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own careers. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or you can join our Slack community. Thank you, enjoy the show. Hello again. You're locked into another episode of Venturi's Voice with me, Liam D. Our guest today is Joshua Graham, the Senior Technical Consultant at Computer Conquest and a podcast host of the development podcast, Getting Apps Done. Hello, Josh.
Hi there. Great to be here.
Cool. We're going to be talking about everything from tech podcasting to community building in this show, which I'm very excited about. But before we dive into all that, would you be able to give us the lowdown on your career? Can you talk us through everything techie that's happened to you from, you know, buying your first computer up until today?
Everything techie. We could be here a while. I started in technology when I was about 14. That was in the mid-90s. Had the most powerful computer in the entire town, and it was a Pentium 166 with 8 megs of RAM. It was a stunner. We had a brand new 28.8 modem, which was the fastest in town as well. I kind of immediately fell in love with computers and decided that's what I was going to do. And I got into programming quite quickly after that, through a lot of trial and error, and over time built up a career around that, to the point that now I can't fit all the languages I know on my CV anymore. And I'm teaching a lot of people how to develop software and trying to drive communities to improve growth for developers.
Great. Sounds cool. So you're currently a senior technical consultant at Computer Conquest. What does that role involve? And has your podcasting had a positive impact on the work you do at Computer Conquest?
Okay. Yes, the title is a little bit suitably vague. We are a consultancy, so we work for other people who are building applications. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, what I'm doing is helping them realize what they can build and helping them plan their project around that, as well as then leading the development team who's actually going to do the work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a development team on their end. Sometimes it's our own internal people that we bring in to do the work for them. So it's a little bit of a mix of a lot of different things. That's one of my favorite things about it. I'm not just working on a single product. Every month I've got something new to play around with and something new to try out. As far as the podcast goes, it was actually something that I just did because I wanted to build some content to help new developers, because when I started in software development, the community wasn't that great. It wasn't very welcoming. And I've noticed there's a huge change in that recently. And I wanted to just really be a part of that and try to pay back some of the people who have helped me by paying it forward. What it has done for me is it's helped me understand better what newer developers need so that I can work with my team better. It's actually made me a better team leader.
Well, there's one thing I really want to pick up on there. What you just said about community back when you started doing technology, the development community wasn't that welcoming. I've started coding very recently in the past year, and I've found the communities to be really welcoming, and there's always this sort of open source sharing ethos that comes along with sort of like technology communities. When was that change, and why do you think, where did that change happen from, you know, what you've just said about it being quite standoffish to where I am now being almost welcomed into every meeting event with open arms and free pizza?
Yeah, I think a lot of it changed after the dot-com boom. Suddenly, it was cool to be a software developer, and people started to pick up on that. And that brings in a lot of different variety, where before it was all people who were really struggling to prove their knowledge. Everything was about building up proof to show that you actually are a good developer. So when you showed up asking questions, oh, you're just a stupid kid, go away. And after that, when people started to really get into software development and see the power of it for business, I think things started to shift. And you're absolutely right. The communities today on Twitter and Facebook and in Slack communities and all over the place are just amazing. I am very, very envious of anybody like you picking up development now, because we just didn't have that.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's been amazing for me. I'm probably asking what are really, really silly questions sometimes, that people are always there ready to, you know, explain to me what an array is and how it works. But yeah.
We all have to learn at some stage.
Yeah, I know that, but that's it, isn't it? So Getting Apps Done, a podcast hosted by yourself and your friend Kel Piffner. So that's a non-technical-ish show for developers. So when did you start Getting Apps Done, and what's the mission behind it?
We actually started it last September, so we're almost up to 1 year now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be our birthday in a couple of weeks. What we initially were starting to talk about was the business concepts around development. So building proofs of concepts and minimum viable products and things like that, because we thought there was a huge lack there. And people started to pick up on some aspects that I didn't really get at first, because there's a huge amount of, there's a wealth of information about the technical side of software development. Everybody's trying to learn syntax and trying to learn about arrays and things like that, but they're not necessarily learning about things like how to estimate how long it's going to take to build a piece of software, to build a function. They're not learning about all these other things that actually make you a really good developer. So what we decided to do was to actually focus on that, start to build a community around that, and start to just ask new developers, what are you struggling with? What are the things that are really hitting you? And then trying to discover from that feedback what we thought they were missing, what they didn't get in boot camps or they didn't get at university, and trying to kind of fill some of those gaps.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. So would it be fair to say as well that the show might have been a way for you to sort of solidify and grow your own skills? I'm thinking about the old saying here, you know, the best way to learn is to teach. Is there an element of that happening, or am I completely off the mark? Is this more of a way that you can sort of impress sort of like the business side of software development onto people?
You know, initially, I will be completely honest, I was starting out trying to kind of impress the business side of people. No, but you are absolutely right. And that was the thing that really hit me. Because I, like you, you hear it all the time that teaching is the best way to learn, but you don't really realize it until you sit down and you start teaching people how much you need to know before you're comfortable to tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing. So yes, absolutely. I think I have learned probably as much as anybody I've been teaching through the podcast, maybe even more.
So as well as hosting the podcast, you've also created a Slack community to accompany the show, which we'll obviously link to in the show notes for all our listeners. Creating an engaged community seems to be an important project for you, and technology and development in general have always had a strong ethos around open source learning and community participation. Well, certainly in my experience anyway, we've already sort of debunked that a bit. But why is that? Why are we so interested now with building communities and sort of building meetups so that help people learn?
I think some of it is just because we need to be more connected with people, real connections to people, not just building up a number in LinkedIn or having as many connections as you possibly can somewhere else, but actually talking to them, getting feedback, because feedback's really important. We learn by feedback. That's how we grow. So without a community, it's very, very hard to get the feedback you need to become a better developer or better person. So I think community really fuels that, and that's why it's become so important to us.
Mm-hmm. So let's change direction a bit and talk about the contentious term rockstar developer. A lot of the time developers are pressured into believing they need to attain a level of coding rock stardom by like peers or job adverts or programming publications, etc. So what's your take on the phrase rockstar developer?
I don't necessarily have a problem with the term itself. What I do have a problem with is how people interpret that, and including me. I'm absolutely guilty of this. I remember when I started in tech, I just assumed that there were these rock stars out there, these gurus, and I needed to catch up with them. And I felt like I was constantly playing this game of catching because I needed to know all the answers. When somebody asked me, you know, what is this? I needed to know the answer right then. And it's perpetuated in everything we do. Even when you go into an interview, it's just a series of questions that somebody's made up that you then have to know the answers for. And if you don't know the answers, you're no good, or at least that's the way it feels. It's very easy to get trapped in that. And I think that's the real problem behind it. It's not allowing for you not to know the answers or to get something wrong or to actually take the time to discover answers. And I think that's where it hurts people.
I mean, you're not the first guest to raise an issue with the term. We had a previous guest called Mairead O'Connor. She worked at a company called Equal Experts. She still works there. And she said a very similar thing. You know, this idea that programmers need to go home and program in their own time on the weekend to sort of keep ahead of everyone and, you know, work on endless projects to be considered competent. It doesn't really have any parallels in any other industry. You know, surgeons don't come into work on a Monday and ask each other what open source surgery they were doing on the weekend. You know, it's a bit strange. But to that point, what would your advice be to anyone who feels like they're being sort of pressured into believing this rock star developer mentality, and how do you escape it?
I think the first piece of advice I give people is that it's okay to be wrong. It's okay not to know the answer. The biggest thing is having a passion for learning and having the ability to go and do some exploration, to do some discovery, find the answers, and prove that you know how to do that. Because to me, as somebody who's needing to manage a team, the most important thing I can find is somebody who can find the answers. I don't need them to know them immediately. I need them to be able to go get them. Mm-hmm. And that's much more important than being that rock star who just always has the answers, because nobody always has the answers.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose conversely then to my last question, putting rock star developers on a pedestal can create a really toxic work atmosphere. What advice would you give to a manager who's like looking to remove the cult of the rock star from their office?
I think a lot of it is just educating your team, because it's perpetuated not just at the management level, but individual developers themselves are always just scared. There's so much fear in development. Kel, the co-host of my podcast, was just recently teaching at a boot camp, and he said that he was just, everybody was constantly full of anxiety because they felt like they needed to get into this position, because other developers were telling them, you need to know all this stuff to pass these interviews. You need to know all this stuff to be useful. And putting people in an environment where everybody knows it's okay to fail and everybody is completely open to feedback and to all this progress of learning, or the process of learning, is the best thing you can possibly do. Just setting that expectation up front that people are going to bomb on some things. They're going to have to learn some things, and it's up to us to share and participate and help and listen to get to a stage where everybody feels comfortable. Because if you don't, you're also not only making it hard for those people, but you're also missing out on great ideas, because everybody's just hiding. They're afraid to say anything at all that might be contrary to what anybody else thinks, because they might get called out.
I listened to a few of your shows before the recording today, and something you've just mentioned now, I know you spoke about very recently as well, which is failure and creating a comfortable environment to fail. Again, we had another podcast guest on called Derek Wise. We'll put a link in the show notes to his soundbite, but he had a really great anecdote where he worked for a video game company that produced EVE Online. Have you heard of it, EVE Online?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So he worked there, and he destroyed their servers globally for about 2 days. And the anecdote's really funny, and it ends up they all had a global company-wide meeting, which was simulcast across the world. They presented him with a cake to say, you know, well done for destroying everyone's servers. He was absolutely baffled. He was like, well, I've just failed massively here, yet everyone's celebrating it. So talking about failure and making an environment that's comfortable for people to fail, how do you do that in a company, and how do you do that in a constructive way, certainly for developers?
Well, I'm not sure you always have to give out cake, but I'm partial to cake myself. So if you do want to give out cake, I'm absolutely okay with that. I think the biggest thing is, again, it's just about setting expectations, just making it clear. When somebody new comes on, I don't expect you to know everything. And I know sometimes things are going to go wrong. The biggest thing I need from you is just to let me know when things do get wrong so we can work together to make it better. And make it open. Just make it absolutely clear that everything is transparent. We work together, and sometimes things are going to go wrong, and I'm here to support you. One of my managers early on was very, very good about that. He always said, I'm here to let you do your job. And when things went wrong, he would make sure that everybody left us alone so we could sort it out. And I learned a huge amount that way. And we got a lot of really great stuff done because he filled that position for us.
Mm-hmm. So reinforcing that culture must happen during the onboarding or the hiring process. You know, when you're bringing on new starters, are you actively looking for people who you know are going to respond well to that sort of environment, or are you just mainly hiring people based on their technical acumen? I think you already know the answer to this one, but I will ask.
To be honest, I don't pay that much attention to the tech. I want to look for people who are capable of learning. Quite often, we will hire people who don't have a perfect match for our tech stack, or even a close match to our tech stack quite often, because we find people who are very good at learning, who can sit down with me at a table and just hack at something with me to the point that I feel, yes, this person can learn and they know it's okay to bomb things. I can leave them to themselves and let them work for a while and they'll be fine. They're going to be okay. That's really important to me when I'm looking for somebody, that they can deal with that. Because a lot of people are stuck in this position where they're just too terrified to do anything. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get them out of that.
I suppose everything you've said so far as well, you know, the sort of the fear of failure and the fear of not knowing everything, that to me does seem to come from this sort of 1970s mentality of corporate working. Do you think startups or certainly, you know, the way, you know, developers seem to jump around maybe once every 18 months, 2 years now, you know, taking different jobs and projects, is that helping erode that fear and that hoarding of knowledge?
I think it can. I think it can also go the other way around. I see a lot of hustle culture around startups where everybody just feels like they've got to be full on all the time, which I don't think is good either. But I think it certainly opened the door for more opportunities. Places like Bootcamp or Basecamp is a very good example of a company that's very, very forward thinking. They are preparing an environment for people to fail. They are encouraging people to learn. In fact, I would go so far as to say they probably encourage them to screw things up every once in a while in the pursuit of improvement and growth. And seeing more and more companies like that is great. We have kind of broken some of that original big blue corporate persona that a lot of the tech industry had for a long time. But I think we've still got a long way to go with that.
Yeah, I think as well, there is that idea of there's almost the, I like to call it like the LinkedIn startup madness, where I'm up 2 hours before you. Here's a picture of my watch at 5:30. You know,
yeah.
We, you know, the almost the idea of being an entrepreneur now has become a bit toxic in itself, I think, where, you know, everyone, you know, you have to hustle and you have to learn and you have to have this side hustle. And I think, do you think that could be as detrimental to sort of like trainee developers as the sort of the things we've just been talking about in terms of the lack of knowledge and the corporate mentality?
Absolutely. I think the biggest problem we have with all of this is, as we talked about earlier, there's just so much out there for a new person to learn that it's so easy to, first off, get burnt out. So if they are in this hustle culture and they're stuck in this mode where they feel like they've got to get up, somebody told me they were getting up at 4 a.m. so they could code before dealing with children. I don't get up at 4 a.m. and I've got a new baby. But between that and then getting into interviews where they're basically grilled and it's like going through the Inquisition, trying to determine what you know and what you don't know, it's very easy to put people off. And I know certainly my early career was very stop and start, because every time somebody told me I was stupid and to go away, or grilled me for answers that I just didn't have and didn't make it clear that it's okay that I didn't have them, I would kind of shy away from programming for a while. I'd go do something else, or I just wouldn't be as interested, or I would just do it for myself and hide it away. And I think that happens to a lot of people. I think we lose a lot of really good developers because they either burn out too quick or they're just too terrified to take any chances.
So I think it's probably safe to say then you think technical tests are a bad thing.
I am completely against them. No, I take that back. There are ways to verify that somebody is technically competent, but I don't think just asking a bunch of questions really gives you any clue at all what this person does or doesn't know or what their experience is. Mm-hmm. It's just too easy to be too specific about your questions. In fact, I would go so far as to say, even with more than 20 years experience, I would fail most whiteboard tests because first off, half the time they ask me a question and I don't know the same name because 20 years ago we had a different name for it, or I work with a different tech stack and we have a different name for it. It's just, it's very difficult to get that right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's way, way too easy to get it so completely wrong that you have no idea if you're hiring somebody who's competent or not.
Mm-hmm. What would you suggest as a good replacement for a technical test then?
This is something I've been working on for a long time, trying to find good ways that, first off, provide a little bit of safety for people, because even if you are experienced at interviewing, it's terrifying going into an interview and trying to open somebody up a little bit and just make it clear that, you know, this is a comfortable situation. You don't have to worry here. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult when, you know, there's a job on the line. They need to pay bills. They've got food to buy and rent to pay and things like that. It's not a situation that's ever going to be all that safe feeling. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things I like to do is I like to just play around with them. I will come up with a little mini project that I will do with them. We sit together, mm-hmm. we discuss, we try different things, and I let them lead, but I'm there to support them as I would be in the real job. When they get the job, I'm not going to suddenly abandon them and tell them to go figure this out and build me an app. I'm going to be there to support them. So I think the interview needs to provide that as well. I should be there. I should be their mentor in the interview as mm-hmm. I would be when they get the job.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? A lot of software engineers' job is to solve problems, not specifically just know the answer to one isolated question on a whiteboard. It's more, you know, what different ways can you think to overcome this problem, which, yeah, I completely agree with. So Rockstar developers are bad, but what about software ninjas?
I read something about that the other day. It was actually bringing up the Webster's Dictionary definition of what a ninja is, and basically ninjas were bad. They weren't good people. And this whole concept, I get where they're coming from. You know, they were extremely talented and all that. I think it all comes down to the same thing, because it's about how you interpret talent when it comes down to it. And a lot of the way we interpret talent is just completely wrong. We're looking at it completely the wrong way. I liked what you said about problem solving, because I tell people all the time, I'm not a software developer because I'm a software developer. I don't love iterating through loops to try to make the perfect loop or anything like that. I got into this because I wanted to solve problems. And I think software is a really great way to solve a huge amount of problems. And it's a really interesting way to do it as well. So that was actually my driver. It still is to this day my driver. I want to solve problems. And that's what I'm looking for when I'm looking for really good developers, people who just have a genuine interest in trying to find solutions for things.
So, yeah, this is really cool, because I suppose this comes back to what we were saying earlier. And, you know, the things that you talk about on getting apps done, which is the business outcomes of technology. We chat to a lot of people, obviously, on the podcast, and I think it's usually a 50-50 split between people who got into tech because they love tech and people who got into tech because they love solving problems. So would you say you're firmly into the problem solving, let's use tech to create business solutions, as opposed to I want to play with this new language because it's new?
I would say I'm probably a little bit torn. I am a little bit of a nerd. I like to play around with tech, and I've got a drawer full of Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and things like that that I like to play with. And I love picking up some new languages here and there just to see what kind of nifty things I can do with them. But at the same time, I think most of that is grounded in a pursuit for new solutions, novel ways that I can solve problems that people have, not even just business problems, but people problems in general, help people make their lives better, whether it's just making it a little bit easier at work or genuinely making something in their personal life much better. That's what I'm in all this for, I think.
Well, that feeds back really well into your current job, isn't it? Sort of talking to different clients about their sort of technical issues. Do you find that obviously playing with new tech helps you better mediate between clients when they're sort of asking for one thing and you need to say, well, I think on a technical level, this is going to work better for you?
Absolutely. Keeping an eye on things and keeping up to date with what's out there allows me to find solutions that are going to work really well for them. If you are stuck with one tech stack or just one type of solution, you kind of try to fit their problems to your solution, and that's the wrong way to go about it. I want as many solutions as I can possibly have so that when they come to me with a problem, I can find one that works really well for them.
Cool. I've got one more question sort of on the rock stars and the ninjas. So, you know, if we remove all the buzzwords and everything else, you know, what skills in your opinion make a great developer, and how do they differ from the skills often touted by, you know, the aforementioned rock stars and pirates and whatever?
Okay. I think a lot of the skills that are touted are just this huge amount of knowledge. And I think it is more important to be looking to learn. Mm-hmm. The thing that I'm looking for more than anything else is somebody who is passionate about learning. Mm-hmm. I, as a problem solver, I'm also looking for people who are passionate about solving problems, but it all kind of comes down to the same thing, that they are willing to learn, because software development is always moving. It's constantly in flux. And I would say the one skill that every software developer needs is this constant appetite for learning new things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you are a back end or front end or full stack or anything in between. Mm-hmm. there's always going to be something new to learn, and there's always something new that you should be learning. You should be expanding. You should be growing constantly. So that's the one thing I think we should be looking for. And I think that's one of the things that often ends up being overlooked. We're looking for people who already have a specific set of knowledge instead of looking for people who are looking to grow.
Do you think employees who work in non-technical disciplines could benefit from some programming knowledge?
Yeah, I think it is an interesting concept. I talked about this with quite a few people. In fact, I've sworn for years that things like laws should compile, because there's so much in programming that we can learn about how things logically should fit together that I think it really does benefit everybody to have at least a basic understanding of how iteration works and how logic itself works in general, because those are sorts of things that I apply to all sorts of things in my life. I do woodworking on the side, and I still apply those things to that as well. And it helps you become a better person in a lot of ways.
So this has been a really great show today. I'm going to start wrapping things up. Have you got any further resources, listening or reading suggestions for people interested in, you know, app development or community development?
Actually, you mentioned a really good one. I think Free Code Camp is really great. I know a lot of the people in our community have come from originally doing Free Code Camp, mm-hmm. and then moving on to boot camps, or deciding that based on that, they were willing to invest in a 4-year degree at a university. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is a really great resource. And there are quite a few of them like that. I'm actually struggling to think of any off the top of my head, though. I think another one that is up and coming is dev.2. They have a huge amount of resource there, and it is specific to developers. You can find all kinds of stuff on Medium, because people are posting blog posts all over the place, but it's all kind of consolidated on dev.2. So there's a huge wealth of information there. Plus, obviously, Stack Overflow. Everybody needs Stack Overflow in their life.
Yeah, I use it quite a lot already. So thanks for mentioning them. I will, of course, link to all of them in the show notes as well. And last but certainly not least, can you tell us where we can find the Get Apps Done podcast? So what topics do you cover on the show, and how often is the show? If you can give us a bit of a sell to wrap up the show, that'd be great.
Yep. You can find Getting Apps Done at gettingappsdone.com. No spaces, no hyphens, nothing like that. It's fairly easy to find. And we post every single Thursday about topics ranging from estimating software development to learning how to just generally become a better developer, to give yourself the opportunity to learn, as well as talking to other community members and answering their questions directly on the podcast.
Great. Thanks for that. It's been a really fun show today. I've really enjoyed myself. I hope you have too. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll be hopefully catch you soon.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. It has been great.
Yes. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for listening to this Venturi's Voice podcast. You can find links to any resources mentioned in the episode in the show notes on our website. If you enjoyed the show and want to hear more, you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Spotify. We also have a Slack community, which you can join via the link on our homepage at venturi-group.com. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again.